Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 118, the PE10 level today. I'm recording the podcast on Tuesday, March 31st, 2009. The PE10 level today is 13. That's a little below fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. And the title of this particular selection is On the Cool Side. The title of the podcast is not On the Cool Side. The title of the podcast is The Angry Investor. There's a lot of different things going on in this podcast. And I was unsure what to title it. There's about five different ideas for podcasts that I'm sort of mixing all together, and it may be that I'm going to break them out and do the five separate ones. I don't know. I'll see how that strikes me as time goes on, but I'm going to try to combine a lot of different ideas here and hopefully pull something valuable out of it. Anger has been present in our discussions from the first day. Go back to the post of May 13th, 2002, and you'll see anger. You'll see anger at every stage of our discussion. So anger is an investing issue. What was the one I wrote the other day? There was a podcast. What was it called? It said, Internet censorship is an investing topic. Well, anger is an investing topic. You see, I've been focusing on the fact that my background is as a journalist, not somebody who's managed a big mutual fund or something like that. So whatever quote-unquote expertise I possess comes from that. And I think the big mistake we've made is not that these things don't have value, not that the people who manage funds don't have something to tell us, but that we've put all our chips on one type of knowledge, and that one type of knowledge helps us understand roughly 30% of the investing project. And the 70% that really drives things is our knowledge is almost non-existent. And as a result, our overall understanding of how investing works today is primitive. And the only way I know to change that is to start looking at those issues that we have not addressed in the past and that we feel a little funny talking about, and we get a little uncomfortable digging into these questions, but we simply have to. And one of the ones we need to look at is internet censorship. And so I did that podcast a few back on that one. That was, let me see what number that was. Internet censorship is an investing topic was Robcast number 115. This is 118, The Angry Investor. Well, anger among investors, that's a topic. And oh, I don't think there's anyone who would deny that anger comes up in investing topics. If you go to some of these, you know, the discussion boards that I've posted at, you know, places like Motley Fool and Morningstar.com, those places are known for being, well-regulated. Those places are known for not allowing the crazy, angry stuff. Go to, I don't know if these places are still around. There used to be, was it Yahoo? I don't know. There used to be some places where they had investing boards, and it was just people shouting at each other. It was like, why is there anybody here? You know, you couldn't understand why anybody was there. And that, you know, certainly it's not that bad at the places. The reason I posted at the places I did is because the reason I started at Motley Fool is I wanted to avoid all that junk. And Motley Fool had the strongest rules on the internet to protect us. But Motley Fool went angry. At least the Retire Early Board did. And, Vanguard Diehards had a good reputation for a number of years, and Vanguard Diehards went angry, and Bogleheads.org has gone angry. And so there's something about investing that makes people angry, and it's not most people. 80% don't want that junk, But boy, that 20% sure wants it. And you know, it always comes back. And I don't think we're going to solve the problem by ignoring it. I think we need to face it. And frankly, in order to face it, we need to start thinking about why it is we don't want to face it. The idea that we need to face it is so obvious. If you want to have a successful discussion board on investing, you need to have some reining in of the anger. And why don't we talk about it? But boy, when I bring this subject up all the time. I've been doing it for 7 years because it's been such a problem in our community. And I'll just tell, I mean, lots of people agree with me. I know that. I know it just because I have common sense and I know people a little bit. And I know I've had people tell me they agree with me. But boy, bring the subject up and the room gets real quiet real fast. So we need to look a little bit at what is causing the anger among investors. And I personally believe the anger, it's not among all investors, but boy, it sure has a huge influence on all investors because the anger stops us from learning. And when we don't learn, we of course invest ineffectively. And when we invest ineffectively, we destroy ourselves. So we need to look at it. I think, I just want to say starting off, I'm going to, as I say, mix different ideas in here. And I think it all fits together. I'll try to make a case that it does. But the bottom line on a lot of this is people will say, oh, you know, you're just discussing philosophical ideas, theory, you know. There's really nothing you can do about human nature. Human nature is what it is. Well, it is. Human nature is what it is. That part's true. But it does not follow that there's nothing anyone can do about it. Human nature has been what human nature has been since the beginning of time, but successful societies do things to bring out the best in human nature and to rein in the worst of human nature. And that's how human beings move ahead. That's how we achieve progress. That's how, and what does that translate into? That's how we achieve wealth. Wealth is essentially a physical manifestation of progress. We advance as a society, we become wealthier as a people, and frankly, we've got a little bit on the wrong track, I think, with this passive investing stuff in recent decades, and we need to find out what we got wrong and how we get back onto the right path. And one of the things we need to look at is what is making some of us so angry. Now, all of these things I'm going to pull in here, I think, are things that just came up today in my travels around the internet. The first one I want to bring up is there's a guy who I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. I think it's James. I can pronounce James, but the second one, his last name is I can't tell if it's Surowiecki or Surowiecki. I'm going to say Surowiecki and hope that that's close. James Surowiecki. Now, James Surowiecki wrote a good book called The Wisdom of Crowds, and there's an old investing book called The Madness of Crowds, which argues against bubbles. And The Wisdom of Crowds was very interesting. I started to read the book, and I got torn away from it, and I haven't gotten back to it. I want to get back to it, but it'll be some time before I do. There's just too many things on my plate. But I want to read the whole book. But the idea in this book was just fascinating because he's saying that, you know, Madness of Crowds is a famous book about bubbles. And, of course, we're living through the aftermath of a bubble today. So the Madness of Crowds is a very relevant book for today. It describes what's happened to us. But The Wisdom of Crowds takes a counter argument and it says, crowds are actually smarter than individuals. That's the efficient market theory. And so James Surowiecki in this book, The Wisdom of Crowds, is arguing for the efficient market theory. He's arguing that the market sets prices properly. Smarter, you know, that you can't beat the market. Now, I believe there's some truth in both books is what I believe. And so I think I'm going to do a separate podcast just on that theme. So I won't belabor it too much here, but I want to bring it in because it's relating to the point I'm trying to make in the podcast about the angry investor. But Surowiecki wrote a column March 31st in The Guardian. And it's at guardian.co.uk. And the title is G20 Summit, How the Bandwagon Wrecked the Wisdom of Market Crowds. I'm just going to read one sentence because I really like this sentence at the very end. He says, the collective intelligence of markets can be a startling and useful thing. It's just too bad that it's been years since we have seen much of it. You know, I don't want to go through the whole argument because it would take too long, but his point there is that it's not really, he's sort of acknowledging that the market messed up, the market mispriced things, which of course it did, but he doesn't really want to blame markets. He's saying we need markets, and markets provide valuable information, and I think that's true. You know, it's a paradox in my thinking, because I am always talking about community. If there's one word that I've used more often in all of my writing on investing, I think it's community. Probably even more than valuations. It's right up there with valuations. Community and valuations. And so communities do have a wisdom that individuals do not. And that is part of what's going on with the efficient market theory. What the efficient market theory, I've said this also, I've said the efficient market theory is the worst idea in the history of personal finance in terms of the human misery it's caused. However, I've often said there's a lot of good in that theory. There's a lot of smart stuff going on. And if we could mine the good stuff without letting the bad stuff pollute our discussions, boy, you know, could we ever learn how to invest effectively? So that's our job. And so what we need to do is find out how is it that we need to take advantage of markets, because markets really are smart. In other words, the market is an independent player. The market is comprised of people. But the market has its own intelligence. I had an earlier podcast, The Market Has a Brain. The market has its own intelligence. And we need to mine the value of that intelligence, but not the way the efficient market theory does it, not the way passive investing does it, where we say the market knows everything and nobody can outsmart it. That's a recipe for death. So we need to find a better way to make use of the power of the market. And one of the things we need to do as an early step is to figure out, how is it that the market led us so astray? Why is it that in this particular case, the market has messed up so horribly? That the market started telling us that passive investing could work. You know, that we don't need to change our stock allocation when prices go to insane levels. And that's what I want to touch on here. And I think anger is the clue. Because as I say, we've had anger going back to the first day of our discussions. Now, I talk at the Goon Central Board with the goons. The goons are the posters who have destroyed the retire early and indexing discussion boards, or at least tried to. And I go over there and I have conversations with them, and the conversations are, you know, they're idiotic, frankly, if you in an overall sense. I try to talk sense, and the goons talk nonsense, and make of it what you will. But some of the things the goons say are sincere, and I'm always looking for the sincere stuff and trying to make peace with them, saying, look, you know, learning how to invest effectively is not going to hurt you. It helps every single investor in the world to learn how to invest effectively, and that's all that those of us who have argued that valuations matter, that passive investing cannot work in the real world, that's all we're trying to say. So what are you so angry about? You know, what are you so angry about? So there have been, I get the feeling that the goons are a little bit alarmed. The goons, they've been able to shut down discussion effectively for 7 years, but because of the price crash, people are asking a lot of questions they have not asked before. People are talking back to people like Mel Lindauer and Taylor Larimore, and, you know, they're the goons are getting nervous. And there were a couple blogs where they tried to disrupt, and the blog owners were not willing to shut the discussions down. And so the goons are getting a little nervous. So the sense you get reading these threads is they're trying to cut some sort of deal with me. Who knows? I honestly don't know what the deal is. You know, they talk in code, so you can't figure out what it is. I think I had a discussion with Drip Guy today. He's posting under a different name now. I forget the name. Z Dierman or something, but I think it's Drip Guy, I'm pretty sure. So Drip Guy was trying to offer some kind of deal. And the deal seems to be, you know, he said, he basically said, look, if you keep posting honestly about safe withdrawal rates, we're going to continue to destroy you. You know, we've been smearing you for 7 years and we're just going to keep at it. And I said, well, Drip Guy, I'm not happy about that. I don't like it. I don't approve of it. I say it's wrong. But I can't really control you, can I? I can tell you I think you're wrong. I can't control your behavior. If I were to post dishonestly on safe withdrawal rates, I would be betraying my fellow community members. So, no can do. Not interested. Find somebody else. I'm going to continue to post accurately what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates and about all sorts of other questions. I don't have any choice. And he came back and said, well, you know, that shows how insane you are, that you think there's no choice. In other words, he's trying to say there's some sort of choice between that. He said those aren't your only options. I said the only options I have are to post honestly, which is what gets you angry, or two, I could post dishonestly, which means I'm a goon. That's what I said. I'm a goon myself if I do that. And he says, oh, those aren't the only two options. That shows how insane you are. So he won't say what the third option is, but the implication, the suggestion is there's some other option. I'll be darned if I can figure it out, but I think what he means, I'll tell you what I think. I could be wrong. I'll tell you what I think. I think what he means is to play the game that lots of others have played. There are lots of people who understand that valuations affect long-term returns. I'm obviously not the only one. Thousands of people, millions of people probably. And what they do if they don't want to get smear campaigns directed at them is they play this game where they say, oh, I lower my allocation when stocks, you know, when valuations are high. There's certain comments you're able to make, but they don't say that the passive investing dogmas just are wrong. That's the line you're not supposed to cross. So they will never say, oh, the safe withdrawal rate studies are an error. That was like nuclear when I said that. Or they don't say John Bogle, his speeches, he conflicts. They're logically inconsistent. He says things that don't add up. They don't say that. Or John Bogle made a mistake. They got very upset when I wrote an article saying John Bogle's big mistake. Or they don't say, Mel Lindauer has led vicious smear campaigns against the indexing discussion board community. Or John Graney has led vicious smear campaigns against the retire early discussion boards. These are the sorts of things. So, what they're trying to suggest is, Rob, you know, we could let this be if you would stop. You know, you don't have to tell the truth. In other words, you can sort of kind of tell the truth about safe withdrawal. You can say, well, I don't feel too good about those studies, but you can't say they're wrong. You know, you can't say they're wrong. That's a line you can't cross. Now, I don't agree with that. I think honesty compels me to say they're wrong, but it's interesting, you know, what they're trying to salvage, you know, what the deal is that they're trying to offer. The idea is, it is dishonesty. I don't know how anyone could say different. But, you know, a numerical calculation, and they get the numbers wildly wrong. The safe withdrawal rate was 2% back in January of 2000, and they were saying 4%. That's not wrong. It's going to cause millions of busted retirements, and it's not wrong. Yeah, it makes no sense. So why do they even want to? Why do they even want to achieve that? Why don't they just admit they were wrong? Now, the way I've said it before is the reason they don't want to say they're wrong is if they acknowledge that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies get the numbers wrong on retirement planning, that means These studies were developed in accord with the passive investing model of understanding how stock investing works. That's why they don't have a valuations adjustment. Passive investors don't change their allocations based on valuation. So, you know, why would you bother to put an adjustment in? It doesn't matter for practical purposes for passive investors, valuations. So if you acknowledge that all the retirement studies are wrong and have caused millions of busted retirements, you're as much as acknowledging that passive investing is wrong, that passive investing has caused millions of busted retirements. And that's just what I want to say. That's just what I want to persuade people of. I want us to ditch passive investing and develop a model that can work. But they don't want that. So they're okay if you say, you know, personally, I sort of kind of, you know, don't feel good, not making any adjustments. But they don't at all want anyone to say that these studies are wrong, because wrong means they need to be corrected, and correcting the safe withdrawal rate studies means correcting passive investing, and they don't want to go there. It's too big. Okay? So that's how I've always put it. Now, the question then sort of becomes the more global question is, why is that so disturbing? Why is that so disturbing to change your investing model? I mean, it's a big deal. I certainly acknowledge it's a big deal. But is it that big a deal that you would have 7 years of smear campaigns that you would destroy entire communities? John Graney's lost well in excess of $1 million, you know, defending this idea. I mean, is there a point at which you would say, you know, it's not worth it? I keep waiting for us to get to that point where people say, yeah, it's just not worth it. You know, why don't we allow honest posting on investing? Let's just do it. Okay. Something came up on a thread this morning at a blog called, Four Pillars. I think I really like the guy who runs the blog. His name is Mike. And it's a good blog. And I haven't read it regularly. I've read it every now and then, but I'm going to start reading it more regularly because I've seen some good stuff. And today's entry was a guest post, but a very good one. And the post raised an article. It had nothing to do with investing, but I'll tie it. You'll see how I tie it back. But the idea on the guest post was, when you go to a car dealer, I don't know what to call this. It's sort of a false negotiating tactic. But when you go to a car dealer, the guy pointed out, sometimes you'll sit down in negotiations, and you might spend an hour or 2 hours or several visits cutting a deal. And you'll eventually get to a deal, and the deal is, you know, we'll sell you this car for X price, you know. And you know, all the options, whatever, you know, all these things have to be negotiated. So you've put in 2 hours, you know, a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of emotion invested. And then the guy says, okay, we've got a deal, but I've got to get this approved by my manager. Then he goes back and the manager says no. And so now you don't have a deal. You thought you had a deal. Is that cheating? You know, is that unethical? And I think it is. And the guy writing the blog post said it is. And then he pointed out, the guy writing the blog post said, well, this is not Mike. It was a guest post. And then somebody said, well, or the guy writing the blog post said, well, some people, their way of protecting themselves is they do the same thing. They say, any deal I cut has to be approved by my wife, you know, or my husband, by my spouse. So their deals, you know, they cut a deal and then they renege. And the guy's basically saying, this is bad. You know, you should honor your deals. You shouldn't do that. You should insist that others honor their deals, but you too should honor your deals. And Mike, the guy who actually owns the blog, well, I put up a post. I put up a post saying, you know, I thought it was a great topic. And I think what happened was Mike said he loved the idea of people going to their spouse, to their wife or husband, and reneging, because it's the only way to fight back. And I said, well, I agree it makes sense to fight back. We do have to protect ourselves. That's a high priority. I said, however, I do think in general, the guy who wrote the blog entry is right that this is sort of an ethically questionable practice. It's sort of dishonest. You're engaged in negotiations as if it's serious, and then at the last minute, you're going to pull out. You know, if it doesn't, you know, I mean, that's just not right. And so I said, I think I can understand doing it to protect yourself. But the key here is it is unethical unless you're really honest about it. I said, if you're really upfront saying, you know, I'm keeping a reserve, I'm keeping a backdoor exit, then it's not dishonest because they're on notice. And I said, it would be even better if you say why. Say, I'm doing this because I've heard of car dealers playing these sorts of games. And until you agree not to play games, I'm not going to agree not to play games. And I said, the problem is this sort of ethical conundrum comes up in all sorts of marketing techniques. I said, telemarketing is rooted in that. I know. I've seen my parents, you know, they're a good bit older. And my parents, it used to drive me crazy. When telemarketers would call, they would be polite to them. You know, like, hello, and they ask you your name, and, you know, what are you doing? And they're talking with them. I'm like, why are you talking to these people? But what these marketers were doing is exploiting the fact that people from an earlier generation were raised to be polite. And when somebody called you on the telephone, you didn't hang up on them. You didn't smash the phone down. You said hello, and you were polite and gracious, and they're exploiting that to make a buck, and I think it's cruddy behavior. And so, I don't say every telemarketing call is unethical, but the ones who push it and really, you know, are you know, won't let you off the phone without you slamming the phone down, that's unethical because there are some people who were raised not to behave that way. And they shouldn't have to change their personal belief set, you know, to be able to defend themselves from a telemarketer trying to exploit them. So I said, I think, you know, this is a problem. You know, in other words, a lot of marketing techniques in recent years have been, you know, they're not illegal. Maybe that's a problem, but they're unethical. And you know, Mike. The guy who owns the blog sort of came back and said, well, ethical schmethical. That was the start of his post, ethical schmethical. He's saying, you know, it's about making a buck, and you got to do what you got to do, and you got to, you know, eat the other guy before the other guy eats you. Whatever works, money-wise, works. Now, I don't know what most people think. I think people are all over the place on this sort of question, so I won't even attempt to guess. I think there certainly are people who agree with him, without question, a good number. And I think there are a good number who agree with me. I don't know, but I think so. And I think there are others who have all sorts of different opinions. So that's sort of a contentious question, but it's a deep question. Here's the point. It's contentious. It's unsettled today, what's right and what's wrong, but it's deep because we're talking about personal integrity. And when you question someone's personal integrity, you're really going to the heart, you're going to the soul. You're saying you're not a good person if you do this. You're not saying, oh, you did some trivial thing. You're saying you're not a good person. Well, I'm gonna tie that back, but you know, That's what's going on, I think, with these safe withdrawal rate studies. In other words, I look at it as, hey, we're all in this together. We're all trying to learn how to retire early. We're all trying to learn how to invest effectively. And I happen to find out that the methodology is analytically invalid. So naturally, I help my fellow community members. I tell them what's wrong and how to fix it. Doing a good thing, right? Well, the people who wrote the studies don't see it that way. They feel that I'm challenging their personal integrity. And they're not wrong. I mean, they're wrong in a sense. Certainly, I wasn't challenging their personal integrity when I first corrected the studies. My assumption is this is just a mistake. It's not an ethical violation. But once they covered it up, it becomes an ethical problem, doesn't it? That you engaged in deception over a number that people use to plan their retirements, and there are millions of people who are going to suffer busted retirements, and you caused that because you engaged in deception and intimidation and word games? Is that not a challenge to the person's integrity? It sure is. Well, when someone challenges your personal integrity, what emotion do you feel? Anger. They're angry because their personal integrity is in question. That's what's happened. And it hasn't happened just on our discussion boards. You see, never think when I use our discussion boards often to illustrate points, things that happen on our boards, but never would I use it to illustrate something that didn't have general application. What we see on our boards is what you see in Investo world in general. Our boards just illustrate how these things play out in the real world. So the same thing is happening with all the experts. You know, people like John Bogle, and I don't mean to single him out. He's certainly not the only one. But, you know, Bogle is sort of known as Mr. Passive Investing. That's the reason I use his name so often. But it is true. Bogle, I can point you to his speeches and I can show you contradictions. He says in every speech that stock prices revert to the mean, which means that the value proposition, the long-term return, is obviously less at times of high prices than it is at times of moderate prices, obviously, if prices revert to the mean. Yet he says that we should stay at the same stock allocation when prices are insanely dangerous. That doesn't follow. If the long-term value proposition is poor at times of insanely dangerous prices, we should be going with lower stock allocations. But if you point that out, if you point out Bogle's big mistake, are you challenging his personal integrity? It can be interpreted that way, certainly. And there are people who have brought this up on our boards. There have been people who have posted saying, you know, there are people who have said that Bogle is being unethical, and there are people who have sort of defensively said, are you saying Bogle's unethical? You know? So it's lurking. It's a big question mark. And it's lurking, and it's not just in regard to him. In regard to everybody in this field, all of the experts, all of the retirement planners, the magazines, Money Magazine, Wall Street Journal, everybody who has advocated passive investing. Because passive investing, the errors in passive investing are not complex. It all has to do with, you know, if you think valuations make a difference, long-term timing has to work. It's just common sense. And if long-term timing works, it's crazy not to let people know that it works. And dangerous and irresponsible and reckless. So underneath all discussions of investing are issues of personal integrity. Okay? And when you question the model, the dominant model of today, passive investing, what you're questioning is the personal integrity. In an indirect way, but in a way that they notice, you're questioning the personal integrity of all passive investing advocates. Now, another thing I wanted to pull in here is that there was a great article, the dailybeast.com website. And I can't tell you the author's name, but he was a guy, and I'm going to use this article as my daily link tomorrow to today's passion feature, and I'm not going to read from it, but I'll just describe the point. But the guy was saying, you know, he appears on some of these cable shows, all these political shows, and he said, you know, he was at one the other day, and he was sort of making I'd call it a constructive, helpful point. You know, and he was saying, you know, oh, we ought to try to understand, you know, I don't know if they were talking about Obama or what, I don't know, you know, some political figure. And he was saying, well, you know, maybe the person made some mistakes, but the person is trying to do this and trying to do that. And, you know, why don't we just recognize there's two sides to the story? And then they had a commercial break, and the host turned to him and said, don't give me any of this BS. about trying to understand, throw out some red meat or you don't get back on the show, buddy. I want vicious. I want angry. Who do you think you are coming in here telling us there's two sides? I'm paraphrasing, but that was the message. And the guy wrote an article saying, you know, our public discussion is becoming polluted. And the title I used for the link was something like and it was from a quote in the article, the angry minority is calling the shots. And I think he's absolutely right that all kind, this is true on blogs. You know, the way you get people to come to your blog is to put up something angry, and then if you try to defend it, if you try to give shading, you get attacked. So we're becoming a nation that's just polarized. You know, if you like Obama, you can't say one word against him. And if you like McCain, you can't say one word against him, whatever it happens to be. And the truth, in my experience, is almost always in the middle. You know, I obviously take positions on different issues, but in the final analysis, but it's a rare person who's all bad. You know, that's a rare individual who's 100% bad. And it's a rare individual who's 100% good. And it's a rare idea that is 100% good or 100% bad. That's why I say I'm the most severe critic of passive investing in the world, I think. But I am able to point out a lot of good things about it, a lot of insights that I've learned about as a result of things taught me by advocates of passive investing. So it's just phony and false to say it's all bad. But that's what, you know, that's what you quote-unquote have to do to be successful on the internet. So, you know, and on these cable shows. And so this is a lot of what's going on our boards. These people are taking vicious positions and engaging in character assassinations. If anyone points out the realities, because they take these extreme, in other words, the more extremist you are, the better, in practical terms. Extremism sells. That's what the guy's saying. And it's a big, big problem. And this is, frankly, the goon problem. I use the phrase goons. What is a goon? A goon, goonish thinking, is black and white thinking. You know, if I say something's wrong with passive investing, they come in and say, oh, Rob says that, you know, Bogle is the worst person who ever lived. He's the devil incarnate. And, of course, I never said such a thing. But they take, you know, I say he made a mistake about the efficient market theory, and they take that to be he's the devil incarnate. You know, or I say the old school studies got the numbers wrong, and they say, oh, Rob says they intentionally misled people from the first day. And that's not true. I don't say that. But they change it. So that anyone who points out the realities of the errors is going to have their reputation smeared. And not only have their reputation smeared, they're going to have inaccurate quotes stuck in their mouth, so that people can't learn the truth. And that's goonish thinking. And that's, now, you know, a final point I'll make in these various points I'm trying to pull together on why we're so angry today in investing, in Investo World. Passive investing. Passive investing is the same phenomenon. The phenomenon we're talking about when we talk about these blogs or these cable shows where the angry minority, and it's not the majority who believes in this stuff, I know that, where the angry minority calls the shots, it's extremism. That's what passive investing is. See, people don't see this. I wrote a guest blog entry the other day called, it hasn't been posted yet, but, you know, if it will be. But, I said, passive investing is the most extreme investing strategy of all. People don't see that. Passive investing was sold to the middle class investor as a moderate. It's sold as if it's a safe, a reasonable, moderate strategy. But it's the most extreme strategy of all. There was a guy, radiology doctor, at the fire boards who did an analysis once, what do they call it? standard deviation analysis to see what are the odds. The assumption in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies is that for the first time in history, valuations will have zero effect on long-term returns. That's how they generate all the numbers. They put in this crazy assumption, and then they generate numbers and tell people this is safe to plan a retirement around. And he did a standard deviation analysis to find out what are the odds that this assumption is going to come through for us in the real world. You know what the odds are? 1 in 740. That's the odds that these retirement numbers are accurate. 1 in 740. Now think if they sold it that way. What they say is, yeah, 100% safe, 4% withdrawals, 100% safe. Couldn't be any safer. If they said there's a 1 in 740 chance that this withdrawal rate is safe, people would know not to use it. The people using the safe withdrawal rate studies, they're looking for something genuinely safe. The people, the 80% of middle-class investors are doing a good thing. They're trying to find out what's safe before handing in their resignation. But the quote-unquote experts are giving the most reckless, irresponsible advice possible and packaging it as being safe. Now, why do they do such a thing? Well, there's all kinds of reasons, and we've talked about that in all the podcasts. But one of the factors is that extremism sells today. But it doesn't sell in a, how can I say this? It doesn't sell if in an open way. You can't put on your television show and say, this is extremism. But they try to do with the show, oh no, we present both sides. You know, we're all moderate, we're fair, we're balanced, blah, blah, blah. And then they put the most extreme commentary on. It's like they're appealing to the darkest part of human nature. The part that is goonish, the part that is extremist, the part that is just ugly emotion. But they package it differently. And that's what you have, that's what you see at all these discussion boards. The Motley Fool and the Morningstar read the rules and you'd say, oh, this is a perfectly reasonable place. They've got protections against all this ugliness. Not gonna find any of that here. But then look at the board, and if someone posts accurate numbers, they get a goon squad after them. And the owners do nothing. The owners just, hey, that's, you know, oh, no. We don't follow our published rules. Oh, where'd you get that idea? You know, what Motley Fool said to me is, oh, that would be ideal. If we were to allow honest posting, that would be ideal. But the rules say they do. This is what, you know, this is our problem. Now, so the problem here, first of all, it does affect Investo World. It affects Investo World because passive investing is itself part of the phenomenon. Passive investing is like one of these cable news shows, so-called news shows. It's extremism packaged as something different than what it is. Or one of these blogs where, you know, it's just red meat comments, you know. Give the animals red meat. That's what passive investing is. And I don't say intentionally. I don't even say it was developed intentionally, but that's what it is. Find out what pushes people's emotional buttons and give it to them. And what people want is a get-rich-quick, not people, not a dark side, the dark side of our human nature. What the dark side of our human nature wants is get-rich-quick scheme packaged as responsible investing advice. And that's passive investing. It's a get-rich-quick scheme because it says don't pay attention to valuations, which is get-rich-quick nonsense. But it's sold. It's packaged as, oh, it's so responsible. We've got studies. We got this. We got that. Not trying to beat the market. Just being responsible. Fund your retirement. Stay the course, you know. So this is the enemy. The enemy is goon thinking, extremism. And one of the questions you have to ask at some point, and I think I've been sort of circling around this in some of my earlier podcasts where I started talking about God and evolution and all this sort of thing, is, you know, a question you have to ask is, well, you know, something that people say to me, you know, I think I mentioned my brother said this to me, too. Human nature's always been this way. Sure, we're going to have a huge price crash. Sure, we're going to have millions of people lose their retirements and lose their jobs and lose their businesses. But hey, people are just greedy. Nothing we can do about it. I don't think that's right. Because when I have spoken to people on discussion boards, 80% haven't been greedy. I don't even think, personally, the goons are all that greedy. I mean, they might be a little bit, but I don't really think it's greed that's driving this. I just don't get that feeling at all. The greed is there. I'm not trying to be Pollyanna. I don't say it doesn't exist, but it doesn't seem to me to be the driver. And part of what makes me think it's not the driver is passive investing isn't packaged as greed. If it were really greed that people want it, they would sell it differently. It would be open porn. It is financial porn, telling people that valuations don't matter. But it's sure not packaged as financial porn. All the marketing slogans are, you can't beat the market, stick with your plan. That doesn't sound like porn to me. So there's no question that the appeal is to the emotions. But the packaging is not. And if we really all were just greed heads, it would seem to me the packaging would be more obvious. It would be obvious porn, not hidden porn. And so I go back to the story I told about my parents and the telemarketers and how they pick up the phone and they're polite to these people. It's sort of a generational change. That the telemarketers are ruthless, but people of my parents' generation had a sort of, gentleness. And so I think what I'm coming to believe is that part of our problem is investo world. This is a deep thought I'm going to put forward here, but I think it's true. The market reflects what is going on in the society in which it operates. You see, James Surowiecki is saying, the market's not the problem. Markets can be good. And I think he's right. But what he didn't answer, what Surowiecki didn't answer is, well, how do we make the market good? You know, Surowiecki acknowledges says markets can be good, and I think he's right. He acknowledges they have failed us this time. But he's saying, well, let's not give up on markets. And I agree. But he didn't answer the question, what made the market so bad this time? Why is it for 30 years we've been shoving this junk down people's throats? What happened? How do we stop doing that? And it could be. I am leaning towards thinking this is the case. The market reflects what's going on in society. So what's happened is people, you know, I'm not the only person who has pointed out the errors in the safe withdrawal rate studies. I may have been the first person who did it publicly, but there's obviously been others who have done it since. And my guess is there are people who knew about it before I did it. Maybe they had private conversations. And you know what people said? When they said, oh, the numbers are wrong? They said, ethics schmethics. Like the guy said on the blog this morning, ethics schmethics. Because I had people say that to me. I can remember when I pointed out the errors in the old school studies, and I had posters who were using those studies to plan their retirements, and they would put up this long line of Z's, you know, and then they put in parentheses, wake me when it's over. In other words, they find it boring. Accuracy is boring. Why is it boring? Because porn is exciting, you know, for a little while. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear about the girl's other qualities. They don't want to hear about her intelligence and her kindness and her work ethic and her, you know. They want the cheap thrill of passive investing. They want the cheap thrill of the get-rich-quick scheme. But it's not, you know, the question we have to answer is why? Because if we always wanted only cheap thrills, markets wouldn't be good. Markets really would be a bad thing. Markets really would be a bad thing. And if we always wanted cheap thrills, we wouldn't have all the wonderful things we have in this consumer society, wonderland of ours. We would have destroyed ourselves, you know, many a year ago. We wouldn't be here having this discussion. The reason we're having the discussion is the contradiction between two things. One, stocks are wonderful, and two, we rack our brains to come up with a way of destroying ourselves investing in stocks. Why do we go to so much trouble to destroy ourselves? What's that about? What I think it's about is you have to look, you have to get out of investor world and look at how humans behave in other life endeavors. And the answer is we do this sort of thing all the time. You know, read a novel and you'll see it. Read any of the great novels. You know, read Crime and Punishment. It tells the story. Raskolnikov, you know, I think that was his name. Raskolnikov, is that right? You know, he kills the old woman. She never did a thing to him. He just, well, I don't want to go into what Raskolnikov did, but the point is, humans have emotions and humans have souls. And the efficient market theory discards all that. The efficient market theory acknowledges that humans have brains, but that's it. We're made up of brains, hearts, and souls. You know, the Wizard of Oz, it was the brain. If I only had a brain, if I only had a heart, and if I only had courage. Courage is sort of the soul. The efficient market theory looks at one third of it, the brain, and it gets that part right. Does good work. But it ignores our souls and it ignores our hearts, so it's not human. That's why my book that I'm working on is called Investing for Humans. I'm trying to add in the two dimensions that have been ignored. And the standard reaction you get is ethics schmethics. You know, who wants to hear about that junk? I just want to make a buck. But the paradox is if all you want to do is make a buck, you're not going to make a buck. You might make it short term. You know, you might get your jollies off with your financial porn, but it's not going to stick. It's not like meeting a real girl and caring for her and marrying her and having children with her. It's a very, very different thing. You want financial porn, you can get it. It's out there. A lot of people willing to sell it to you. But don't think you're getting the real thing. The market reflects, I'm coming to believe, the market reflects what is going on in society. Now, a question comes up if that's the case, and that is, passive investing has caused, you know, great human misery every time it's been tried. Four times in U.S. history, four times it's brought bone-crushing losses to all who followed it, and an economic catastrophe every time. So it's no secret that passive investing doesn't work to anyone willing to look at the historical data. So what is it about our society that caused us to embrace passive investing in the late 1990s? We embraced it earlier, but passive investing wasn't really that dangerous in the 70s and 80s because rational investing had us going with high stock allocations in the 70s and the 80s. It was only in the late 90s that passive became dangerous. You know, you're tempted to say we're ethically not as good a people. And that, I think that's worth exploring. You know, as I say, it sort of comes up in these questions of God because, I think what may be going on is that, this is going to be a generalization. I'm going to be a little bit risky even putting it forward, but I'm going to say it because I'm thinking it. We're not, some of us believe in God, some of us don't. Some believe that there's a substitute for God, you know, that we can have an ethical, good society without God. Some don't think that. But even those who think it, I think it would be fair to say, haven't worked out all the details. You know, what is this substitute going to consist of exactly? You know, and how's it going to be enforced? And how are we going to teach each other how to behave? We don't know the answers. And when you don't know the answers, you get into trouble. Because humans have some of these dark emotions. And if you rein them in, we're capable of great work. We're capable of great kindness. But if we don't rein them in, the porn is what sells. The porn will kill us in the end. Does that mean, every podcast from here on in, I'm going to argue we need to believe in God? That's the only way to invest effectively? I can't do that. It's not practical, and it would get boring. And I don't really even believe it. But I believe that integrity, having integrity is part of what it takes to invest effectively for the long term. That I believe strongly. Integrity is part of the story. And caring is part of the story. And we're going to have to talk about those things. And we're going to have to talk about bringing those things back into our public discussion of investing. Or bringing them in for the first time if they've never been in before in a big way. Ethics, schmethics is not an answer. It's not just investing we're talking about. We are talking about what I'm sort of coming to as my tentative thought on all this is the world. I often make this point about how we're in a crisis today. We may destroy the U.S. economy. And if we destroy the U.S. economy, we're probably going to destroy the U.S. political system. The whole thing. If we go into a depression, the likes of which we saw in the 30s, in the nuclear era, that's going to lead to a world war and nuclear war, and that's the end. It's a dark thought, but I don't see, am I the only one thinking that? I mean, it's a little hard for me to believe I'm the only one thinking that. So the stakes are very high. But I think it's a mistake to say, I could get up and give a gloom and doom speech and say, passive investing is going to lead to the end of the world. Well, maybe, but what good does that do? It's going to lead to the end of the world. I shouldn't be spending my time recording podcasts. I should go out and, do something else until the end of the world comes. If you check history, what you will see is we have these periods where we come to believe in things like passive investing and nastiness on cable shows and extremism in blogs and all this other stuff. It all goes together under goon thinking, black and white thinking, the angry minority gaining the upper hand in influence in our society. It all works together. I tend to think these things happen. There's some sort of crisis going on in the society, and I think the crisis is this question of personal integrity. What's involved? What's it mean? Because the old meaning of personal integrity it doesn't apply for many people today. The old meaning was, the Ten Commandments, the Ten Suggestions, whatever, the Ten Good Suggestions. And if that doesn't apply, it doesn't really matter whether you go to church. People who go to church follow the 10 suggestions, and people who go to church don't follow it. And people who don't go to church follow the 10 suggestions, and people who don't go to church follow it. It's all over the board. But my point is that these questions are up for debate today in a way that they haven't been up for debate before. And I think that affects the investing advice we hear. Because in an earlier time, people would have said, you got the numbers the people use to plan their retirements wrong and you haven't corrected it? You haven't corrected the study? What, are you crazy? Because one of the 10 suggestions says you shouldn't do that. But now it's all, ethics, schmethics, word games. People use word games to defend these studies. And I just, I'll wrap it up. My thought is what's going on is that we are in a crisis in the sense that it's a potential transition into something much, much, much worse or much, much, much better. In other words, if we reach down deep and these questions come to a head and we say, well, as a society, we're going to take it this way. We can't allow this ugliness on the internet, or this ugliness in cable shows, or this ugliness in the investing advice field. We've got to do something about it. We've got to reclaim our humanity. We've got to be people that have hearts and brains and souls all together. If we do that, I think we have the potential to, you know, rise to greater heights than we've ever seen before. And when, as a society, we rise to greater heights, the market is going to rise to greater heights. The market is reflects the realities of the society around it. And that would mean we would go to a whole new model. Passive investing becomes a thing of the past. Rational investing becomes the model of the future. And the bull and bear cycle becomes obsolete. The boom and bust becomes obsolete. That's how big this is, that we change the history of investing. But the dark side is, blow up the planet. And so what I sort of see happening, it's strange to talk about, but I just, I put it forward for people's consideration, is sort of like a growth spurt. You know, with a child, if you've raised a child, there's times when they have these growth spurts, and just all of a sudden, when they're young, they have these growth spurts, and just, it's like 1 week, they look like a different kid. 1 week, they grow, they change, their facial expressions change. And as they get older, they sort of have emotional growth spurts. You know, it's not as, you don't see as much physical change, but they, you know, they're a happy, well-adjusted kid, and then all of a sudden, they've got some sort of growth issue there. And it makes them, irritable or antagonistic or whatever it is. They go into some sort of, of course, people always talk about this with adolescents, that they're impossible because they're trying to figure out, what's my place in the world? What's the future? You can't go backwards. You can't go back to being a kid again. But they're afraid to go forward. I think that's where our society is. We can't go backward to having the 10 good suggestions being the quote-unquote law of the land. But we don't know what's ahead. We haven't figured that out. And if we don't figure that out, we collapse as a society. We better figure it out. I can't give you the answer. All I can say is that I believe part of the answer is going to be acceptance. It's this two-pronged thing I always talk about, charity combined with honesty. We're going to have to learn how to reach the hand of kindness out to those who have different viewpoints and stop the idea of crushing people who have different viewpoints. So we have to be charitable, but without being dishonest. You see, what Drip Guy is trying to push on me is it's sort of a charitable thing. He's saying, Rob, you could end all the hostility at our boards, but the price is you have to agree to post dishonestly. And I'm saying, no, that can't be right. Because if I post dishonestly, people suffer busted retirements, and that can't be right. So we've got to figure out a way to tell the truth about investing and all these other things. But investing is part of the society. And so, my focus is the investing side. I write about money, so I need to always pull it back to that. I can't ignore the bigger questions because it's part of the story, but I need to focus it in on the investing side. So we need to figure out a way to tell the truth about investing, and the truth is passive investing doesn't work. Passive investing cannot work. The old school studies got the numbers wildly wrong. The failure to correct the studies has caused millions of busted retirements, all that. That's honest. So that needs to be said. But it needs to be said in a spirit of charity, where we have an understanding that the reason things have gotten so far off track is largely because a lot of people in our society today don't know what's up. We still care about our integrity. We don't want people questioning our integrity. But yet a lot of us have adopted a policy of you know, engaging in deliberate deception and engaging in intimidation tactics and engaging in word games. And that doesn't match. You can't do that stuff and retain your integrity. So once you learn that defending passive investing requires that sort of behavior, guess what? You've got to give up passive investing. You know, in the old days, we would give it up because it's a violation of the, you know, the 10 good suggestions to engage in those tactics. Well, if you don't believe in God and you believe in evolution, you're going to have your own 10 good suggestions that say essentially the same thing. I don't know. You know, I'm not, it's not for me to tell people what the, you know, what the new 10 suggestions should be, but I think if we want our markets to function, we're going to have to tell people the truth about how long-term, about how valuations affect long-term returns. I don't see any way around it. The markets won't function if people don't have that. And that pulls it back. That'll help me wrap it up. That pulls it back to James Surowiecki's point. James Surowiecki says, it's not the market that is bad. Let's not throw markets out. Just he acknowledges the markets have failed us. But he says, let's not throw the markets out. Because the collective intelligence of markets can be a startling and useful thing. It's just too bad that it's been years since we have seen much of it. That's exactly right. It's not the market that's bad. It's not safe withdrawal rate analysis that's bad. It's not using the historical data to guide your investing decisions that's bad. It's not discussion boards that are bad. It's not the internet that's bad. It's not cable news that's bad. It's what the humans have been doing with these tools. The humans have been, in recent years, we have felt a pull in the direction of goon thinking, black and white thinking, ugly thinking, porn thinking. And we need to reach down deep and find the better part of ourselves. And to let that light shine in everything we do. And yes, we'll be better people, but this is not a morality site. So it's not my place to tell you we'll be better people exactly. It kind of is in a way. But not only. It's not a morality site. But we will not only be better people, we will be richer people. Because wealth comes from goodness. I believe, I recently wrote an email to my friend Brian on that question. I said, you know, I was talking about how the, you know, this whole crisis and whether it has a good purpose in the end. And I said, this crisis could end up being the best thing that ever happened to us. If it causes us to get rid of, you know, to dump passive investing and to move to the rational model. We'll be a wealthier people. Yes, we lost a lot of money, but we can make that up if we switch. So I said, this could end up being a good thing. I said, I don't believe that God is punishing us, except to the extent, you know, that a parent punishes a child who's engaged in willful self-destructive behavior. The promotion of passive investing was willful, self-destructive behavior. The one thing that can destroy a stock investor is coming to believe that valuations don't affect long-term returns, and that's passive investing. We've destroyed ourselves. We all are angry investors today. You know, this is what all this talk of populism is about. But we need to stop directing that anger outward at Bernie Madoff and at the bankers, you know, and at AIG and at the politicians and at the experts and all this sort of thing. And we need to learn the lesson that comes from looking at the man and woman in the mirror. The man or woman in the mirror. What have we done to cause the problem? Then when we acknowledge what we've done and we forgive ourselves, then we can take constructive steps to change the rest of it without the anger. See, the anger is a sign that we know something's wrong, and to that extent, it's a good thing. But as long as all the anger is directed outward, it's non-constructive. It's just blaming. It's just, you know, finger-pointing. We need to start with what we can change, and what we can change is ourselves. And when we all, as a people, decide we've suffered enough, we don't want any more of this, we will start speaking out in favor of more humane investing strategies, more human investing strategies. We will become a better people, and we will become a richer people. And that's, you know, the name of the blog is A Rich Life. And the what I'm trying to suggest with that title is I'm going to teach you how to achieve financial freedom early in life, but it's not just about making the big bucks. It's about how you live. You can be a multimillionaire and live a crummy life. You don't belong at my site. And you can be a minimum wage worker and retire early. I know people who have done it. I've spoken to them on discussion boards in the retire early community. It's not all about how many bucks you got. That is part of it. We're managing the bucks, but what we're really managing is life. We're trying to achieve a rich life. And having money makes you richer. It opens up opportunities to you. That's my pitch. That's what I have to offer. I'll make your life richer. But if you start telling me I'm going to get richer by telling myself lies about safe withdrawal rates, then sorry, Charlie. I can't help. That, not me. Find someone else. I can't go for that. No can do. I will post honestly or I will post not, and I urge all my fellow community members to do the same. Because when we post honestly, we learn, and learning is what makes it fun. And fun is the rich life. That's part of what financial freedom is about. If you have to lie, and you have to sell out your fellow community members to get there, we all ought to start questioning whether the there we're trying to get to is really a good place to be. My take, my sincere take. If you have any thoughts, please send an email. Use the contact Rob button at the left side of every page at the website, passionsaving.com. Good luck. Good luck with trying to realize your dream of achieving a rich life. You take care.